Welcome to Hashtag No Limits. I am your host, Shelley Kino, and Hashtag No Limits is about people whose society has placed limits upon but who are busting through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are but not who we will be, and I believe that to be 100% true and that there is no better example than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. Quick science lesson for those who don't know, the caterpillar literally dissolves into its cells and then reforms into the butterfly. It's not finished, though. It then has to struggle to get out of the cocoon in order for its wings to be strong enough to take it everywhere it's going to go. None of that, I imagine, is easy, but neither is busting through the limits society places upon a person. And today I'm going to talk about a topic with my friend Daniel, and I'm going to say his full name in just a minute, but I need to see his name in order to be able to say it, and I don't want to botch it up. So he and I are going to talk about school safety and why that is so important, especially for our kiddos who have IEPs or who have different needs. So before I bring Daniel on, I just want to remind you to like or subscribe to the Facebook or the YouTube channel where you're watching this. Make sure if you're watching with us today or in the replay that you give us a hashtag live or hashtag replay and where you're watching from. If you have any questions or comments, please be sure to put those into the chat and I will make sure to either answer them during the call or myself or Daniel will answer them later. So without further ado, I'm going to bring Daniel Delesneski. Did I get it?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Good. Thank you, Shelley.
All right. So, Daniel, welcome. Thank you so much for being here today. How are you doing?
Thank you. Good. Thank you for having me on. I know it's a very uncomfortable subject, and it's just something that really needs to be talked about. But usually when it's talked about is when something happens. It's like everything else. I was on a podcast the other day and I see it's like a sine wave, you know, it gets this very high media coverage, very high parental coverage. And then it kind of drops off because no one really wants to think about this. You don't, because it's right. It's something that is unthinkable. It is very rare. I will say that even though the media focuses on this a lot, it is a very rare occurrence. But again, it's something that I do go on these podcasts to make sure that teachers, students are prepared and have the confidence to prepare for just such an incident. It's always best to be prepared and be proactive.
Yeah, absolutely. And I talk about this a lot when I am in IEP meetings. You know, we need to be proactive instead of reactive. And, mm-hmm. you know, we have to practice, even for those things that we really don't believe are going to happen, whether that be fire drill.
Yes. Uh-oh, Shelley, you froze on me.
Okay. Well, I apologize for that technical difficulty. I've been having this problem off and on. We have had several inches of snow and the temperatures are below freezing where I am. And so my internet is not happy with the weather outside. So I apologize for that delay. Okay. And so, yeah, we want to make sure that we are aware. And I know, you know, there was a situation not very long ago from when this is airing that happened. And there were some people who were interviewed and they said, we just never thought it would happen here.
Right.
And I'm happy to hear that because I don't think we could live in the state of thinking, oh, this is going to happen here. But at the same time, we need to have ourselves prepared. So what are, so give us a little bit of your background mm-hmm. and kind of what brought you to where you are today.
Sure. I was with the Secret Service for over 24 years in Washington, D.C. I was very fortunate to stay in Washington, D.C. I didn't get bounced around the country. And the reason for that was I was with a division called the Uniform Division. And I loved that division because it had all the specialized units. It had the counter snipers on the roof. It had the canine division, which I was fortunate enough to have a canine. And you'll see in my email, his name was Korak. And it also had the SWAT team, the motorcade support that meant the motorcycles, crime scene search. and all these specialized units. So that's why I like to stay there and be in that division. And I was fortunate to be in a couple of those specialized units. So I also had rank. So just like a regular police agency, I went through sergeant. I ended up as lieutenant. I started at right at the end of Reagan's term and finished up under President Obama. And then I moved down here to Florida. And I was going to retire, but being, you know, an alpha personality, that didn't last very long. After about 3 months, I was driving myself crazy. And my wife, my wife at the time, ex-wife, now, and that wasn't the reason for this, but she said, "Hey, I found this position for you at one of our school systems." And I was like, okay. And I looked at the, you know, what they wanted. It fit my resume. It was for an emergency manager with their school security. And I thought, okay, that sounds great to me. And realizing that it's a very dense county where I am down here in Florida, and found out after doing some research, they covered over 100,000 students in 140 schools. And it was also just me. I was solely in charge of that. I had no staff. I had no one helping me. So I was kind of just thrown into this and actually thrived in it because I didn't want to sit at a desk. And I went and visited every one of those schools. It took me a year. I saw every 140 schools and met with every principal. And it was very gratifying to me that things did get done. There is a bureaucracy, as we know, with the school systems. I didn't have autonomy. I couldn't say this door needs to be fixed today. That fence needs to be put up tomorrow. Whatever it was, I didn't have autonomy for that. So that was frustrating. So I had to work through the system in order to do that. So things were a little slow in that respect. But one of the great things about the county I'm in and the school division I was in, very diverse, very rich county up north, bigger schools, as big high schools now are as big as college campuses. We had two schools that dealt with disabled and handicapped children. We had two schools that dealt with children with behavioral problems, because even if they made threats or they, let's just say, had criminal records, we still had to teach them. So we had schools, two schools set aside for that. And it just was very diverse, which worked out really well because I got to see everything that possibly could happen in any of these schools, whether it was a large school of 1,500 students to a small elementary school with less than 100 students. So it worked out very well. And it took a while to, I say, get things moving. I had to use my Secret Service training for trying to deal with how we would run these drills at the schools, especially active shooter drills and other drills, whether it was a bomb threat or obviously we have hurricanes down here. And our schools were set up as shelters during hurricane season. So I also was in charge of that. So I thank God, by the time I left, it was computerized. But at first, I had to manually assign people at these shelters. So it was very strange to me. I'm from up north. I'm, you know, up in, I lived in Connecticut. Hurricanes, you have to do what? So I had to assign these principals, assistant principals, and head plane operators at these schools. And it didn't necessarily mean they're going to go to the school that they're normally, you know, do during class time. During a hurricane, I would, you know, they were spread all over. So it was, oh my God, it's frustrating. And I would get complaints and phone calls. No, I don't want to go to that school. So just send me here. Oh my God. But it was in addition to my regular duties of dealing with school safety and making sure that schools had a school safety report that was sent to me that was on file, because again, like every other corporation, the school system and administration, you always want to, you know, for lack of a better term, CYA, if something happens, the press would immediately say, "Well, do you have a school safety plan?" "Yes, it's right here." And they would be able to show it to you. So they all had to have a school safety plan, no matter what the school was, had to be sent to me and then sent up to Florida Department of Education. So it just was something that, again, yes, did I learn things along the way? Yes, but it worked out. And I tell you what, I had some great principals that were ready, and they were wanted to, you know, have their teachers have confidence to run the drills correctly. Now, you know, we talked about what you said about drills, about fire drills. I mean, we're doing fire drills for hundreds of years, and you know, I can't think the last time any child even got injured in some kind of fire. And it's something that you've done it since you were a little kid. You just here you go. Here's the route we take. You wait for the all clear. Come back in. We're good to go. But I don't want to say since Columbine, because school shootings, happen years and years, hundreds of years before Columbine. Columbine was just the explosion of this over the media and everything, this 24-hour news cycle. But since then, what we do, and I'm sure that your parents out there and people know, we do lockdowns. That's something I advocate, that we do a lockdown. And during a lockdown, what happens is you close or, lock the classroom door. And in fact, I encourage that those classroom doors be locked during school time, because then you're already one step ahead. The blinds will be closed. You sit the children on the floor away from the windows and the door, silence your phone, pull the shades down, and silence your phone. You would not listen to any announcements, and you don't open that door for anything until someone comes with a key. So it's just something, again, that once you drill enough, most teachers, and I'm telling you, teachers have one of the toughest jobs now, especially after the pandemic, as we all know. They've lost a couple of years of these kids. Now you're added this. And I've talked to teachers that have gone through some kind of tragedy or something that would happen. And now you hear about a school shooting and they would have their spouses, their boyfriends, girlfriends saying, I don't think you should be doing this. And I would go to meetings with teachers and they'd be raising their hands going, I didn't sign up for this. I signed up to teach these kids. I signed up to take care of them. I signed up to, make them grow and get a great career. Not for this. It's just something, it's just the way society is now. And I know it's not something I really want to get into, but you could talk about why is this happening? Is it going to continue? How can we prevent it? That's something that would take hours to talk about. And It's something, again, that these teachers are doing a really great job. I try to help them as much as possible and give them the confidence that, look, I know it's a terrible thing to have in the back of your mind that this could happen. More than likely, it's not. I'll be being hit by lightning, but I just want you prepared that just in case, just like a fire. If it does, this is what you need to do. And it's a very simple process just to hear about a lockdown. Now, the problem I'm having, and I don't know if your folks out there in the audience are having it, but there are marketing companies out there that want to change things. And sometimes it's a knee-jerk reaction. Let's get away from lockdowns. We've had those for so many years. Let's do something different. And one of the things they try to do differently is called run, hide, fight. And run, hide, fight has also been in the ether now for 20 or 30 years, but it's made for businesses, for corporations, and for adults. And there's a video that's been out for this long, and it's an old video done by the Department of Homeland Security and Houston Police Department. And it shows a bad guy coming in, and the narrator goes over like the movie narrators. If you can run, you should run. Then the next step, if you can't, then you should hide. And the third step is, if it comes to it, you have to fight. And somehow this transferred over to schools, and I completely disagree with it, because I don't even care if you modify it. I'm not going to have children run out of a perfectly safe classroom or try to fight someone. I don't care even if you're at high school level. And the other thing that's marketed out there now is something called ALICE training. And there you can go to them on the internet. It's an acronym. It's ALICE. And ALICE stands for Alert, Lockdown, Inform, Confront, Evacuate. Kind of confusing to remember all this stuff. But what's happening is they market it towards teachers and administrators. And these teachers, administrators love it. Oh my gosh, instead of being passive and sitting and waiting and hiding and being scared and wondering if we're going to get shot, this is more of a reactive kind of training. And oh boy, they love it because we can be reactive. We're going to do something. And when you go through the process, it's like, well, whatever they're doing, it's very dangerous. And in fact, this marketing company has been sued civilly for millions of dollars just for the training itself. And there are no, as far as I know, my mentors are people who have been in the business for 30 or 40 years, and they still agree lockdowns are the way to go. Every school is different, but lockdowns still work no matter what school you've got. I don't care what, it doesn't matter. High school, elementary school, middle school, doesn't matter. So this idea that we're going to change things and have this reactive program, which we found out, it's easy to go back and look. I mean, we can start with Sandy Hook to a town that I live next to. I lived in Monroe, Connecticut. My sister now lives in Newtown, Connecticut. Sandy Hook is a school that's in that town. And the principal came out and confronted the shooter, and she got killed. We saw it at Marjory Stoneman Douglas here in Florida. The gym teacher confronted the shooter and got killed. Nashville, Iowa. I mean, it goes on and on. And that's part of this training that, look, I don't know if you agree with me or not, Shelley, but at the point where you've got some unhinged individual that wants to create havoc and violence, you're not going to calm them down. You're not going to confront them and talk them down from what they're doing. That's too late. You should have talked to them months ago. At this point, they're already at the end. I mean, they're going, either it's going to be suicide by cop, they're going to kill themselves, whatever it is. They're not listening to anybody. I mean, they want numbers. They're going in and create this violence. So I really disagree with this type of training. I don't want somebody to get involved in it. And if parents hear this from their children, and that's the main reason why I go on these podcasts, talk to your kids, find out. What are they doing for emergency procedures? Are they having you go into a lockdown or locking into a room and they're perfectly safe? Or are they telling you to run out of the building and evacuate? Or are they telling you, and this is part of the training, to throw things at a gunman if they get in the classroom? No, I'm not having my child throw something at a gunman. And my next question would be, how do you get in the classroom in the first place? That door is locked. That's one reason, and I'll play devil's advocate because you get a lot of even law enforcement people say, well, if they're in that classroom, they're sitting ducks. I know they're not. There's no documented, and in fact, there is no document to this point of all these active shooter things that have gone on for all these years of someone breaching a locked door. It takes too long. They're not going to do it. They're looking for easy access. So if that door is locked, they're moving on to the next door. And a perfect example is that video of the Nashville shooting where you had the shooter outside. They busted through the glass doors at the entrance, and you see them walking down the hallway, and they're trying the doors. Locked, they're moving on. Locked, move on. Open, they go in. So they're not going to sit there and waste time by trying to bust through a locked door because they know the police are coming. I mean, in fact, I'm not on here to advocate for my book, but my book is called The First 5 Minutes because FBI data has shown most of your school shootings last between 3 and 5 minutes. That's a short time. I mean, it feels like forever when you're involved in it, but it really is a short time because the police are on their way, or the school has a school resource officer who's armed and they're going. So I try to tell people, look, talk to your children, find out what's going on. If you're uncomfortable with how they're doing this drilling for your students, your kids, talk to the school. And if that doesn't help, go to the school board, talk to them. If that doesn't help, now it's time to go to your legislature and say, look, I really disagree with this. I don't want to pull my kids out of the school. I want my school to be safe, but I want these drills to be run so my child is safe. So that's the main thing I try to get on it, to advocate for parents to talk to their children to find out what's going on. And you do have to say something because this is not like the old days where you drop the kid off. Hey, I'll see you after soccer practice. I got to go to work. And then at the end of the day, you sit around the table. And what would you talk about? What'd you do in school today? What did you learn? Nope. It doesn't happen anymore nowadays. Now with this 24-hour cycle, the social media, you hardly get a chance to sit with your children at dinner time and get a chance to talk to them. You have to find out what's going on.
Yeah. So thank you for all of that.
It's a lot. It is. I apologize. Once I get going,
no.
It's hard for me to stop.
No. You are totally okay. I appreciate everything that you shared. There's just a few things, you know, to touch base and maybe kind of pull out on a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that you mentioned was that there are even some law enforcement officials and a lot of parents and educators as well that feel that if you're just in the classroom with just the door locked, mm-hmm. that you are sitting ducks. And I remember when I was teaching full time that, you know, I was always blessed because I had a partition, a mobile partition. And so I had that set up in the corner on the same wall as my door. And it was the far away corner from my windows, because unfortunately my door and my windows were on opposite walls. Okay. And, or even in classrooms where I only had a door and I didn't have windows, I would set this partition up, you know, the opposite way. So I could put my kids, kind of behind that partition.
Sure.
But what I couldn't do was keep them from talking or keep them from being scared and I, you know, or crying or whatever. And sure. And I believe that that is the main reason that educators feel staying in the classroom with the locked door, with the locked windows is more dangerous because that shooter will walk by and hear mm-hmm. the kids inside. And they'll therefore know that there's people inside. So what do you say to that argument?
I've had that happen where it's not particularly certain areas. The kids don't take it seriously during the drills. And you'll hear them talking behind the door, you know, laughing, whatever. They just don't take it seriously. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you one story. I was in North County, you know, the elite, the snobs, the white kids. And yeah, they would be up there talking and laughing and stuff. And what usually happens and what did happen this one time is the school resource officer, who was a former NYPD cop, went in there and read them the riot act and basically dressed them down saying, look, do you want me to go to your parents and tell them that because you couldn't keep your mouth shut, you died that day? How do you think your parents would feel about that? So it's just the idea that the seriousness of the drills themselves has to be taken into account. And I understand it's hard. Yes, I get it that teachers have, there are disciplinary issues where that's going to happen. But if you at least take the drill seriously, and I'll tell you what happens in South County, where I'm at, which is more Latino, Black, lower income, those drills down there, you don't hear a peep. And the reason is because they're in an area during the weekend or after school, there's a lot of stuff going on down there. Assaults, there's gunfire. I mean, these kids know they got to take this seriously because they're involved in it in their daily lives. So, and even if you have the kids in a classroom like that with the door locked, that shooter knows there's kids in that classroom no matter what. I mean, if they're coming in, look, 99% of your shooters are either former students or current students. They know what's going on in that school. They've been observing this particular school that they're going to create violence in. They're observing this for 3 or 4 months, at least that amount of time. This is not something you woke up one day and grabbed a gun and say, I'm going to go shoot up the school. There is planning involved. They know there are kids in that school. I don't care if they're quiet or if they're talking. Doesn't matter. The door is locked. They are not going to shoot out a locked door just because they hear kids talking behind the door. What difference does it make? Whether quiet or they know they're kids, they know they're in there. So they see what happens all the time. They know what exit. Look, the crews at Margie Stoneman Douglas, he knew what gate to go through. He knew what door to go through. It was 3 floors. That school is a huge school. It was like a college campus. And he walked in unabated. No problem. What? Nobody stopped him. He walked through. He had a long rifle, for God's sakes. So this idea that if they're talking, and that's just one idea, because there have been other things that were mentioned about, you know, don't let them sit in the classroom and evacuate. That I don't think that affects it at all, because it doesn't matter whether they're talking or not. The door is locked. They're not going to bust through the door because they're not going to break the lock. The other thing is, if you're going to put the emphasis on the teacher to make that decision of whether to stay in a lockdown or evacuate, that liability is just going to create really bad stuff in your head. I don't want a teacher sitting there going, geez, if something happens, it's on me. And stuff you're going through your head, like, I'm liable for that. I have to make the decision for 30, 35 kids. How do I know even all the kids are going to follow me? You probably could have 5 or 6 little kids either freeze, or they're going to say, my daddy's a police officer. He told me we stay in a lockdown. Now, the other thing is, you're not the only one who's thinking this. There's other teachers thinking the same thing. Well, if you all make the decision to evacuate, you're going to pile up at that exit, because during the drill, you're walking. Here we go, kids. Come on. We're going to. During the real thing, panic. There is going to be massive. You are going to run your butt off to get out of there. Why? Why? You don't know where the gunman is. Even if I'm in a classroom, if I'm a teacher, I try to put myself in the teacher's place. Look, if I'm in a classroom and they announce a lockdown, an active shooter, I'm in lockdown, and I hear over the loudspeaker, or I hear someone, or even a message comes across the phone, hey, the gunman is over in section 3, room 200, whatever, which is like across campus from my classroom. I'm supposed to believe that? I'm not going to trust that person. Maybe it's right. Maybe they're not. Maybe there's another gunman closer to me. I have no idea. There's no reason for me to take those kids and put them in even more danger to go out into a hallway where they're going to see horrible things. They're going to hear horrible things just to get them to an exit to get out of the building to go where? Stay in the lockdown. They're perfectly safe. The help is on the way. Now, what I get is, what about Uvalde? What about Marjory Stoneman Douglas? Those police just stood outside and did nothing. Look, I'm not saying that's going to happen. 99% of the police out there are trained in this. That was an anomaly, and the media just went ballistic over that stuff. Look, I was also upset. But that shooter got in because the door was unlocked. The outside door was unlocked. The classroom door was unlocked. He just walked in. Locked the doors. During school time, there should be one entrance only into that school. You have to go through a lobby area, and that lobby area should be secured. Whatever person comes in, you come in, you're checked at the counter with your ID. The only way you're let in there is it comes back that you have access and you were allowed in, whether with a key card, a key, or someone actually escorts you into the building. I mean, yeah, you can do it like a private school. I mean, most of these schools don't have the personnel for that, but most private schools will just have, they're like, whatever the parent is, no, you're not getting in. We'll bring the student to you, or we'll bring a representative to you. What's the issue? You forgot their lunch or whatever it was, you need to talk to them? We'll bring the kid to you. I'm not going to have a parent go in, even if I've seen him or a stranger come into that school. I don't trust anybody. That's just me. What happens in schools, as you know, you got either PTA members or other parents that have been there a number of times. Look, you trust as much as you can. And the thing of it is, especially with schools, you want the welcoming atmosphere. And the question I get all the time is, how are we going to prevent this? You cannot make schools a prison. You can't. I don't care. You just can't do it because you want some kind of welcoming atmosphere so the kids, the staff, the parents do feel welcome to come into the school. Yet there has to be a line drawn where there's certain things that has to be a boundary where you have to at least make it safe. Now, with that being said, most of the time what happens is the principal or administration will say, hey, we got a grant. Let's put in metal detectors. Or let's put in more cameras, or let's put in some other technology. Don't do that. Stay away from that. Use your money to train your people because it's up to the humans, not up to technology. Technology is always going to fail, and metal detectors are nothing but security theater. They look good. They don't prevent anything. If I've got some unhinged person who's going to get into that school, I don't care if there's a metal detector there. They're going to get in and create violence anyways. That's just a waste of money. It should be on your people to observe, to find out what's going on. You got a stranger. Now, I'm going to tell you something, Shelly. Probably it's going to upset you. But I've been to, more than, over 100 active shooter drills. But I was also assigned by my superintendent to go to this high school. It's in North County, about 1,500 kids. And they said, look, we're having some issues where the gates are open. People are getting in. We're getting complaints. He said, go up there and find out what's going on. When I went up to the school, everyone needs to wear a pass or badge with identifying you. So I put that in my shirt and hid it. I had a baseball cap on and a hood in case someone recognized me. I easily got on campus. Any high school, you can get on campus. I mean, it's sad, but you can. So I'm walking around, Shelly, at least 20 minutes. And everybody's friendly. How you doing? Hi. Oh, I walk with purpose. I wasn't like lounging around like some homeless person, kind of, acting weird. I was with purpose. I'm going here and then I would turn the corner and go there. I was walking with purpose, had a piece of paper in my hand, like I had something to do. And everybody was friendly, even the kids. Hey, how you doing? I'm a stranger. I don't know any of these people. Finally, after about 20 minutes, I'm like, this is ridiculous. Nobody's even attempted to talk to me. Why? I don't have a pass. Who am I? What am I doing? So around the back of the building, there was this glass enclosed classroom, and there were kids in there doing twirling. They were doing the twirling stuff like cheerleaders. And I was pretending I was taking pictures of them. Still nobody's stopping me. So I'm like, this is crazy. I got to go talk to somebody. So I came out again, and now it's near lunchtime. So, of course, being a high school, I mean, there's kids, the bell rings, and there's kids going everywhere. I mean, you know, all running all over the place. And I started walking towards the administration building, and I see an assistant principal who I had met previously. And he kind of glanced over at me, and I just kept walking, kept my head down. I kept walking. Well, he starts making a beeline towards me. I'm like, okay, let's see what happens here. And he goes, can I help you? And I said, yeah, I'm looking for my car. And it completely threw him off. He's like, your car? I said, yeah, I know I parked it over here somewhere. I forget where I parked it. I got kind of turned around. So he's all confused. And he goes, well, what are you doing here? I said, oh, I like to visit high schools. I said, I just, you know, was wandering around. I stopped and came into your high school. It's a very nice high school. I said, you know, you had a lot of kids here, very beautiful. And I was out back and I saw these cheerleaders back there with their twirlers and I was taking pictures of them. And wham, he grabbed onto my arm and he goes, you're coming with me. I was like, good job. Thank you. So as we're walking out, I take my pass out and I'm showing it to him. And I said who I am. And I said, the superintendent has sent me. And he's completely confused. He is like, what? Who? I mean, it was just, he didn't know what to do. So we get outside the gate. And next to us was a vehicle gate, but there also was an entrance. It was an exit gate where you push the exit out, metal gate. So we're standing there. And finally, he starts to calm down. And of course, he's trying to pass the buck. You know, at these huge high schools, usually the assistant, there's like four assistant principals. Well, the one in charge of the safety, no, that's so-and-so. That's not me. I'm like, well, you're here now, so I'm going to be talking to you.
Yeah.
Shelly, as we're standing there, not more than 10 minutes after we're standing there, a student comes up, takes off his backpack right in front of us, throws it over the gate, hits the button, and walks in. And I looked at him and I said, really? Really? And he's just got all red faced. And he said, yeah, I guess we got to take care of that. I said, yeah, these kids aren't dumb. I mean, they're going to, why would they go through the lobby? Just take your backpack, throw it over the fence, hit the button and you're in. I'm like, oh my God. So, and that was just one incident at a high school. I had another incident at an elementary school where I was wondering, you know, how would I, let's say I'm a pedophile. Let's say I'm a bad guy. I wanted to get in. So I sat there one day and I'm observing the school. And what was happening was the head plant operator, he was one person. And he didn't want to walk from one side of the campus to the other where all the deliveries were made. So I found out he had a lock, you know, just a regular lock, clasp lock on the door. And he told the delivery people, yeah, just put the lock on there, but don't lock it. Leave it unlocked. So that way they can take it off and do their deliveries. And he doesn't have to respond because he's way across the other side of the campus. Okay. All right. So I went there another day and I took a look. Yep. It's on there, but it's not clasped. I took the lock off. I walked in and I sat at one of the picnic tables there in an elementary school. And I'm sitting on this picnic table and there's another lady over there probably with her child having, you know, lunch or a snack. As I'm there sitting on this picnic table with no identification at all these kids, hi, how you doing? The teachers, how's it going? Yay. All right. Hi. I was very friendly. Oh, hi. Hi, everybody. I'm some stranger. They don't know me from Adam. What am I doing there with little kids? In your mind, you're thinking, oh my God, the things, if I was had that intention, I could do anything here. I could hide in the bathroom. I could take pictures of little kids. Again, I must have been there for 15, 20 minutes. Nobody's saying anything to me. No one. I'm like, I had enough of this. I go back in. I find the principal. I said, this just happened. Oh, no, she goes. We tell our people to at least challenge people or at least talk. I said, well, you better retrain them because they didn't do a darn thing. And I understand no one likes confrontation, but you don't have to be confrontational. You see a stranger without a pass, without something identifying them that they are allowed on in your campus, talk to them. Ma'am, sir, I see you don't have a pass. You do need to go to the principal's office. I can show you that, you know, where it is, or I can escort you there so you can get a pass. Everybody needs a pass. If they're just look like there is going to be some kind of confrontation, sure, get a hold of the HBO. If you've got, you know, a gym teacher, somebody that, you know, is a little more in authority, call them over. Hey, I don't know what the deal is with this person, but they don't have a pass. Tell somebody. Don't let them just sit there and do whatever they want. So it's just, and I'm not saying that to scare anybody. I'm just saying that you need to be observant. And if you do see that, you know, you're protecting your kids and yourself. Just say something.
Right.
You don't have to be confrontational. Hey, what are you doing over there? You know, just walk up. I see you don't have a pass. Can you respond over and get one? So that's just one thing that really, really bothered me. And I would.
And Daniel, I'm gonna interrupt you for just a minute, because I think about, you know, those were bigger schools, you know, bigger areas, I think, that you were talking about. And I think about, you know, just the rural area where I come mm-hmm. from. And almost all of our schools are less than 600 people. Most of them, I mean, even the towns where the schools are, the towns are 3,500 people, 4,500 people or less. And so you have this sense of, oh, you know, everybody, you know, oh, nothing happens here. You're safe. You don't have to worry about anything. You know, you see the parents, you see the step parents, you see the grandparents, you see the aunts, and, you know, everybody's related to everybody is the joke in the county where I live. And, and so there is this more relaxed atmosphere. And I think what you mentioned before regarding buying a metal detector or training staff is huge, because if we had drills for the adults or even for the kids mm-hmm. where, you know, once a month, somebody random appears at the school that shouldn't be there, you know, and that's easy to do, even in these smaller communities, I would think, you know, because not everybody who lives in the community has a family member at the school. Mm-hmm. You know, you could borrow police officers from other towns, you mm-hmm. know, that just come in, sort of what you said, dressed, and that you get the staff and the students in the habit of thinking,
right,
oh, that person's not supposed to be here.
Right.
And you kind of desensitize people a little bit to that confrontational, because as you said, you know, everybody wants to be nice, you know, especially educators, you know, we're the loving kind, we're the compassionate kind, you know, yes. We want to be friendly, you know, that's what we tell our students, you know, you got to be friendly to one another, but at the same time, cautious. And so I think if there was that, like I said, like monthly training, and you never know what time of the day, what day of the week, you know, you don't get the heads up. Like when I was teaching, we would get the heads up. Oh, there's yes. going to be a fire drill today. Yes. Oh, there's going to be an active shooter drill today.
Yes.
And many times my students, I would want that warning, because if it's a fire drill, that's going to be a very loud noise. And I would want to prepare my students, like, you know, hey, there's going to be a loud noise. You know, we'd practice putting our hands over our ears or whatever it was, you know, and get them prepared. And that kind of takes me down another path of something I wanted to mention. But I just think if we had that where we only the administration knew, you know, hey, there's going to be, and I don't know, maybe I'm thinking in my area, we have like county or multiple county-wide oversight people. And maybe they don't tell the administration. Maybe it happens at that level, because you need your administration to be on their toes too. And if at least they know, or the office staff know, maybe they're going to be the ones that are going to miss it. And they are the more of that front line in a lot of cases. And, yes. You know, I think, I don't know what your opinion is of doing yes. something like that, mm-hmm. but I just, as I was listening to you, I was like, well, that would be a simple thing to do. You don't have to involve the whole school. You just, oh, this class is out on the playground and there's some random person there.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you bring up a very good point. I always ask for unannounced drills. Very hard to do, because I appreciate you saying that about especially a rural, smaller area that knows everybody. My former boss would do that, and he had the autonomy to do that. He would just walk into a school and say, I'm an active shooter, go, and just point at them. And they would look like, you're joking. He's like, no. But he was an assistant superintendent, so he had that kind of power. No, I like doing unannounced drills because you have to see how people react. During a drill that's announced, what happens, Shelley, 9 times out of 10, you're going to pre-prepare because I understand the pressure teachers are under. Look, they're testing. I got homework to do. I got all this stuff to add up. I want to get this drill over with because minimum amount of time is going to be an hour. At least it's going to take an hour to run the drill properly. You just want to get it over with. So guess what? You're going to pre-prepare. The door's already locked. I'm going to put the blinds down and kids go sit on the floor. I'm going to silence my phone. Okay, let's get this drill over. No, that is not the way something like that should be run. If you're going to, I love the way having it unannounced because it's a complete surprise. You're going to have to kick in like, what? Wait, what do I do again? And you have to think for yourself. You have to think what you're going to do. So that, and not only the drill itself, but like you said, someone walking around campus, again, my former boss, would do the same thing. He would just go in and walk around and then, you know, get on top of the principal going, hey, what are you doing? I was just walking around for 30 minutes. Well, what are you, your people going to be aware of this? So it at least then gets, I not say anxiety, but at least it gets to the point where teachers then take it more seriously. Like, oh, wait a minute. Okay. Yeah, that could happen. I don't want strangers wandering around my campus because you take ownership. And even as you go up in grade, middle and high school, I tell these high school kids, look, you know, you have ownership of your school. I see you at athletic events. Why can't you take ownership and then the safety of the school? I mean, you can walk around the SRO. If you don't have a school resource officer, then walk around. Because I guarantee you, especially in a high school, you're going to see a door wedged open. There's going to be a door wedged open. Why? Because either someone's stepping out to smoke a cigarette, someone's getting a pizza delivery, one of the students is late, so they're letting their buddy in, they're going to wedge that door open. So it's just something that to be aware of. And like you said, when you have a stranger that comes in, and it would be nice to do it at least once a month if you have the time to do it unannounced, to have somebody just walk around and make sure that how long does it take? How long was he there? Okay, 20 minutes, 30 minutes. You know, you'd want it a lot less time than that to have someone just say something. Hey, you don't have to do it yourself. You could say to somebody else, I don't care if you want to go with a stronger male or whatever, say, hey, you know, this, I've seen this person, you know, I don't know what they're doing, but they don't have a pass. Just you say something. And, you know, you talk about with kids, you know, the old cliche was, you know, stranger danger. It runs for adults too. So yes, it's a great idea. Right. I would definitely push that in your district.
Yeah. So something else I just want to touch on, because when we're talking about, I very much appreciate that you recognize how difficult it would be for a teacher in a room with 5 or 30 kids or anywhere in between that to have to make that decision. Should we stay or should we go? And I just think about in the different classrooms that I have been in and over my teaching career and some of the students that I have. I had one student that she just moved at a snail's pace. She did not care. It didn't matter to her, no matter how much we tried to make her go faster, no matter what the situation was, she just never got excited about anything. And so if I'm trying to walk out with her, I'm not running. I am walking at a very slow pace. Right. And if I'm walking at a very slow pace with her, but I've got 20 other kids, they're also walking at that very slow pace or they're scrambling by themselves.
Exactly.
You know, I've had kids in wheelchairs. I've had kids who are off balance when they walk. I've had kids who, you know, would have multiple dozens and dozens of seizures every day. It is not safe in any scenario for me by myself, or even, I mean, I usually had at least one other adult with me to try to get those kids out.
No. And there's no reason to. There really is no reason. The only time, and every situation is different, I get it. But percentage wise, it's less than 5% that would happen if you had a chance to get out and you had police that were in right in that vicinity, in that exit area saying it's safe, let's go. Come on out. Let's go. Let's run. That would be the only thing I would do. If you had someone in the police authority saying it's either over with or they're on the other side of campus, we're safe. Come on, we can go. We can evacuate now. The other thing, question I had was, they were talking if you're on the first floor and there's windows and you have windows that can escape through. Because they asked me that. Well, if we have windows on the first floor, why don't we just jump out through the window? I still would avoid that because, again, there's a better chance of a child being injured. I don't care if it's on the first floor. It doesn't matter. But if you've got police officers outside those windows on that first floor and they are yelling at you, come on, come out. Okay. Yeah. Go ahead and do that. Otherwise, just sit in the room and wait. And I get it. You're going to hear horrible stuff. And you're going to be panicking. You're sitting there going, why are we sitting here? Why isn't this stopping? It's going to stop. It's going to end. They're on their way. Now, I think I talked to you before about being a rural area and the police response. And I ask, obviously, if it's in the budget, forget about the technology, go with hiring school resource officers. At least you have a fighting chance now because that person's going to be trained and they're going to go to the danger. You know, if it takes 10 minutes, I mean, hopefully not more than 15 minutes for the police to respond. If you have someone on campus, yeah, then again, I would have parents push for get school resource officers there. You know, it, especially in more urban areas, after we went through the pandemic, and defund the police movement, that kind of got pushed back because the students would, you know, have some kind of conniption about somebody being in uniform. Look, school resource officers are there for protection of the students, the staff. They're an advocate. They go through training. They volunteer for this. They want to do it. They're not there to arrest you or harass you. That's not their job. But it's such a great advocate. And what happened with this defund the police thing, it mostly was parents who wanted them back in going, no, put them back in there. I want my kids safe. So I would advocate for that if you're in a rural area where the police response, you just don't know how long it's going to take them to get there. But you're absolutely right. You're going to have issues. Even during the drill, if you do a drill and you say, well, let's just see what happens. Let's just see. We'll do a lockdown, but next time let's do an evacuation where we go out. And just observe these children as they come out and as they're walking going, okay, in a real panic situation, would I be able to get these kids out in time? So it's, you know, I wouldn't want to put that burden on a teacher or that liability in order to do that. Easier and much safer just stay in the classroom.
Yeah, absolutely. I 100% agree because every teacher that I have ever worked with, even the bad teachers, they want to protect the kids.
Sure.
They want to do what they can do. They also want to protect themselves, but they want to protect those students. And no matter which way it would happen, if it were to ever happen that a teacher made a decision to do something different than what the majority was doing, or, you know, in that situation, if it was their decision to stay or go, if something happened to any of the kids, no matter what decision they made, they would feel horrible.
Of course.
However, to put that sole authority, though, in the moment on a teacher is too much.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's teachers have enough, like you said, we have enough things to worry about and trying to decide what's safe, what's best in that moment. That's not the time to make that decision. We don't, as educators, we get training on a lot of things.
Yes.
And we do not have, because we wouldn't have all the information. And you cannot make a good decision if you do not have all the information.
Exactly. Yes. And I don't expect teachers to turn into some paramilitary Rambo at the flip of a switch. That's impossible. I don't care how much training you've got. I don't care. If you're former military, former law enforcement, good for you. If you're a teacher, that's great. But I don't expect the majority of the teachers to have that type of training or to have flip the switch going, hey, you got to turn into Rambo. No, that's not what it's all about. I just give you enough confidence so that, okay, active shooter, I know what to do. And I'm going to mention this now before I forget. And again, I'm not pushing the book. I'm just saying if you want to get the book, it's only 77 pages, Shelley. You read it in an hour and a half. It's not a 200-300 page book that you're going to get bored in. In the book, I've got these, these are laminated. but it's a quick reference card. And you put it on your lanyard, use for your copiers, whatever, your ID. And on here, I've got everything from threatening weather, suspicious person, lockdown, lockout, bomb threat, that kind of stuff. Because I'm telling you, no one knows how they're going to react in an actual emergency. You just don't know. You think you can plan, okay, this is what I'll do, this, I'll do that. You don't know. You really don't know. And you're going to go blank sometimes. You're going to forget what date is, your name, everything. And you're going to go through the lockdown procedure going, did I do everything? And you could easily look on a reference card. Oh, geez, I forgot to turn the lights off, or I forgot to put the blinds down. And that's what it's for. And it's in the book. You can download it and just laminate it if you want. And the reason for that was I had a doctor friend, and she said, oh, yeah. She said, we use those all the time. I'm like, what are you talking about? She said, heck. She said, we'll have a code purple. We haven't had in months. I forget what that is. I got to look on the card to see what a code purple was. So it's just another tool that's, easy enough to use, and you can reference it quickly. Because I'm going to tell you, I had a real incident, North County of mine. It was in a middle school. And the assistant principal there, I knew because I worked with her husband in my county. And she was very proactive in doing the drills and making sure her staff were prepared if something happened. Well, something did. Across the street from the school, there was a person there who disagreed with his mom's boyfriend. And he took a gun out in the street and he shot up the house. Mm-hmm. And what they should have done, the school right across the street went into a lockdown. Now, nothing happened. No one got hurt, but they did the right thing of going into a lockdown because, the police cordoned off the area. So they go into a lockdown. Police say everything's good. We're okay. Let's throttle it down. And they have what's called an after action event, which you should always do after a drill or even a real thing. She found out after all this training she had done with all her teachers, one third of her teachers froze and didn't. These were people that had already gone through the drills, had been trained. These weren't substitutes that they brought in from another. One third. So you don't know how you're going to react. And I'm not blaming anyone. I'm just saying that could happen. You don't know how you're going to react. You're going to get that fight or flight response. I mean, your stomach's going to be upset. Your mouth is going to go dry. All these things are going to happen, which are natural. But you still have a thought process. You still have to go through the procedures and remember what to do. I used to have in the classrooms, they had a chart that they would hang on the wall next to the map that, to exit out. And I used to have the procedures on there. And I'm like, well, that means they got to run over and look at it, flip through pages. I'm like, just take the card and attach it to your body or something so you have it with you so you remember stuff. So it's just the idea that you do the best you can. I understand no one wants to be a hero, and you definitely don't want to be a hero and go out and confront this gun. You don't want to do that. I tell people, look, because even students, I've seen on there after, a teacher got shot, oh, they're such a hero. No, they're not. They're not a hero. They left a wife and some kids at home. They didn't do anything, so don't do that. There's no reason for you to put yourself in danger. Stay in a lockdown. And I'm telling you, Shelly, I've had principals, especially elementary school, because I'm in elementary school, little kids. I mean, you just feel they're smaller, they're family. You just feel like you are the parent to them. Literally just tears in their eyes because they wanted to go out even during a drill. And they said, well, I'm going to walk with you and make sure my teachers have the doors locked. Okay, but what would you do during a real incident? I would do the same thing. I'd go out and make sure the doors. I said, no, you have to stay in your room and lock the door. And can you imagine? I mean, it's bad enough for a teacher because they're to protect the kids. But here's a principal, alpha personality has to be. You're going to tell them to sit in their office, lock the door, and wait for the police? The anxiety is such, and they were telling me with tears in their eyes, but they're my kids. They are. Keep yourself safe. You're not helping anyone by going out there, getting yourself shot or not going home. So please do the right thing. Keep yourself safe. Then you can help others. And I tell that to everyone that I've on these podcasts. I don't care if you're at a restaurant, movie theater, in the mall. You keep yourself safe. Don't be a hero. Keep yourself safe. Now you're going to be able to help others. So that's the main thing I try to put across. But I was shocked. It happened to me numerous times, especially in elementary school, that these principals were like, no, I have to save my kids. I have to, no, no, you're not. You keep yourself safe. The teachers are going to do what they need to do. Trust that they're going to do what they need to do. So that was really difficult.
Well, yeah, as much as a teacher wants to protect the students, you know, and they have 20 or 30, your principals, your assistant principals, your superintendents, whoever it is, you know, I mean, they've got everybody. So and you're really heart-centered ones absolutely feel like these are all my kids. These are all my friends. These are all my family, whether they're, you know, really biologically related to these teachers and everyone else who's working in the building, as well as the students. You know, that's how it feels. I know you have not wanted to promote your book. And you said that's not why you're here, but I do want people to know how to get it. I found it through Amazon. Is that the best way for someone to get it?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Find the book on Amazon. It's on Barnes and Noble too, but that, you know, most people.
Okay.
Barnes and Noble.
And make sure if you're looking for it, because when I typed in the first 5 minutes, there were a few options that came up. So make sure that you are looking for the Daniel Dilesneski version. And you know, that it's got this, that it is talking about, being a school shooting survival guide, which is not a topic that anybody wants to talk about. I mean, however, I'd rather talk about it and not need it than never talk about it and need it.
No, absolutely. Yeah. You're absolutely right. You know, absolutely right. That's a training I got in the Secret Service, that we trained and trained and trained for something that may never happen, but it sometimes might. So that's a good observation. In the book, I do talk about implicit memory, the muscle memory of doing, you know, a lockdown and going through that procedure and getting that in your mindset, just like when you, you know, put on a seatbelt or button your shirt, kind of do it without even thinking. It just, yes, you do have to flip a switch. I get it. You don't have to go into Rambo mode, but you do have to do it another switch where you go into a safety mode. Okay, now I got to keep my kids safe. What do I do? Door lock, blinds down, lights out, kids on the floor. You just go through that procedure. Now, you had mentioned, you know, drilling with the stranger about once a month, which is great. The drilling for active shooters, probably at least every quarter, because you don't want to get to the point where you're over drilling. Because after a while, people, oh, no, we got to do this again. You know, I got to take time out again. So I would say every quarter at least to do it that way. And again, if I would advocate like you did for unannounced, it'd be great. A lot of times unannounced, though, upsets parents because they're like, wait a minute, my child just came home and said you had a drill. No one told me. So it's like, okay, the only other way to get, I found a way to get around that is you put out a blanket email and say, sometime during this week, we're going to have a shooter drill. That way you can pick a day. The rumor mill will probably still get out, but try to keep it enclosed with just your administration people and maybe a few teachers on this day at this time. But that way you still get that unannounced across to some people and see how they react.
Yeah. And I know it's tough. And I know that there are kids who would get fixated on it if you didn't announce it. And I know there are parents, you know, and it's usually those parents. But at the same token, and I empathize with those parents, and I'm one of those people who's like, no, you got to tell my students in special education before this happens, because, you know, those ones who don't like change, this is going to really mess them up for the day or the week or whatever. But at the same time, I still understand that, you know, it's not going to be announced if it happens in real life. And our kids are going to be upset. And it's better to do it in a controlled environment. And then the teachers can say, okay, I know that you know, Shelley is upset now because that's what she's thinking about. Is this, you know, is this really going to happen? Is it, you know, and then you have the conversations and you work with them and you understand that, you know, some of their behaviors are because they're scared now, you know, and you don't discipline them for that. You understand and you empathize and you say, okay, you know what? Did that scare you? Did that make you think that, you know, what can we do? And again, you take all of that and you be proactive with it. and I mean, we have, you know, hundreds of kids that are going to go through these kind of drills, and there's maybe a handful that will be upset if it's, I mean, the student themselves will be upset if it's not announced and it throws them off their schedule. I get that. But we have to sometimes have that harsh reality of this could be real life, and we need to make it as close to real life as possible. Yes. And Daniel, I could talk to you for hours Unfortunately, I don't let my show go that long. You have been a fabulous guest. This is a tough topic to talk about. Yes. And it is very evident in talking with you that you are very passionate about it and that you are not doing it to make money off of your book. You're doing it to protect our children, protect our educators. And that's so important. And I so appreciate you being here today and your time today. And sorry for the technical difficulties that we had in the beginning. Yes. But thank you so much, guys. If you are at all interested in this, make sure you go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble and you get his book. He said it's 77 pages. You can probably read that multiple times. Sure. And you probably should read it multiple times in order to kind of get that muscle memory going for yourself. So if you didn't already, make sure you like and subscribe to this channel so that you don't miss our next episode next week. And I will see you then.
Thank you. Thank you, Shelley.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelley Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelley Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelley Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shelleykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shelleykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.